everyone. Thought I'd recognize Co-Chair Green, Senator Stedman, Dyson, Olson, Hoffman, and Senator Bundy, who already this morning has helped me. So, welcome everyone. Purpose of today's meeting is to have presented to us the Fast Track Supplemental, Senate Bill 264. We will finish today by 20 minutes to 11. There's another meeting in this room at 11, so that they'll need to clear out and prepare for, and I think we'll be through it by then. If not, we'll come back later and finish up. A little housekeeping, if I could. Rose just passed out this sheet. We have four supplementals this year, and I was a little confused about which was which. So these are the titles as people would like to know them by, and the bill numbers, the amounts in general fund and in total fund. So today the one we're talking about is Senate Bill 264 Fast Track Supplemental. Let's see. Anything else to come before the committee before we begin our deliberations, Senator Dyson?
Yeah. Am I correct in assuming you're not planning on passing this out today?
That's correct.
Good. Thank you.
We have one time constraint that I'd like to recognize. Anything else before we begin our discussions? Senator Green, anything? We have one time constraint. Cheryl, do you want to present the budget first, and then we're going to ask anybody else with a time constraint other than Dan Spencer at DPS? Okay, so we'll have OMB present the budget, and then Mr. Spencer from DPS will be first, and then we'll go right down the green sheet. And you'll remember that the green sheet means we've had pre-45-day amendments, and you'll see those. So with that, welcome, Cheryl, to Senate Finance. Senate Bill 264, please.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cheryl Frasca, Office of Management and Budget. We appreciate your bringing up the fast-track supplemental. We refer to the other one as the faster-track supplemental, the energy supplemental. I'd like to note that we did get them into you before the 30th day of the legislative session to help you as you work your way through the legislative process. The fast track totals $13.5 million, the largest of which is $4.1 million to pay for past disasters. As you know, it's been the legislature's practice to pay for them after the fact. We do have some money requested for FY07 to help capitalize the disaster relief fund so that we might minimize some of the supplementals after the fact to you, but for right now we have $4.1 million. $2.6 million for judgments and claims. You might wonder, why is that in the fast track? And it's because if we appropriate and pay those settlements earlier, we avoid some interest costs. And so the Department of Law asked us if we could submit it as part of this for your consideration. Another $2.6 million for corrections department for inmate health care. And again, this is part of their not only additional population, increasing population, but also aging population. And with that comes increased health care costs. The departments will be glad to answer the questions as you proceed through the spreadsheet describing them. There is one amendment that relates to a capital appropriation that we did submit after the original bill was introduced for $1.5 million for airport improvement projects. So with that, I'd be glad to answer the questions or turn it over to the department if you wish.
Thank you, Cheryl. Is Cheryl's mic on? Is her mic working? Let's tap the end of that and see if we get. Oh, okay. All right. Any questions of OMB? Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Let's start with DPS. Dan, if you'd join us. And while you're doing that, on teleconference this morning from Anchorage, we have Margaret Brody, Jerry Lewansky, and Craig Tillery. DNR, Department of Law. So. When we get to those sections, folks, just to interrupt if I forget that you're there and you'd like to testify. With that, let's go to DPS, which is which line number it in?
Mr. Chairman, we're Section 7, Line 15 on the spreadsheet. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dan Spencer, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Public Safety. Before I begin, let me do something a little bit out of order here and say thanks for the volume. Those of us with only one ear, this is a very nice change. I can actually hear what's going on. Before I had to guess at what you were asking, so I just answered it, whatever I thought it was.
Senator Green swore that it was going to work this year, and it is. So thank you.
Very nice. I really appreciate it. Mr. Chairman, the request in Section 7 is for $350,000 of general funds as a grant that would go to the Kotzebue Domestic Violence Shelter. As you may recall from last year's discussion, there was a question of whether funding that was available from that had been provided by the Department of Health and Social Services to this shelter was in fact appropriate. I think where the question ended up at the end of session last year was that HESS was going to do a further review and determine whether or not they could continue to provide those funds. Apparently that didn't work out. The legislature last year passed a grants line budget for CDVSA that had a $200,000 increase in it over the governor's flat funding request, but that was not intended to address the Kotzebue shelter. And so because the funding from Health and Social Services was not able to materialize, it is operating funding for this shelter. That's why we bring this request to you today.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Spencer? Senator Green?
How will this, is it intended that this be funded next year?
There is already a $250,000 item in the governor's budget for FY07, and I don't know for sure what we'll do, if we'll amend it up to 350 or not, but there is $250,000.
You aren't intending to use TANF money again, are you?
Pardon?
TANF money?
We do not currently intend to use TANF money.
Thank you.
Dan, how long has this program been funded by the unallowable use of federal funds?
Mr. Chairman, that I don't know.
Maybe you could get that for us, just maybe a little history on it. Mm-hmm. Senator Stedman?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also kind of curious just on the background of our shelters, which are certainly needed around the community. I think most of the larger communities have them. But I'm not real familiar with the funding involvement, and maybe we could get a little bit of history on that and how the other shelters are treated also.
Dan, if you'd do that for us, please.
Yes, sir.
Other questions of Mr. Spencer? Thanks, Dan, for joining us this morning. Anybody else with time constraints? Okay, if not, let's just start at the top and ask admin to come forward with section number one. Morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eric Swanson. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration, and I have with me this morning Stan Herrera of the Enterprise Technology Services Division in our department. Mr. Chairman, we have one request in the bill today. It actually appears in two different sections, Section 1 and Section 4B, and that's lines 2 and 9 on the spreadsheet. And the request is for $1 million of general fund to be appropriated into the Information Services Fund for us to use on a telephone system replacement and stabilization phase one project. Mr. Chairman, this project was originally part of a FY 2007 capital request, but because of events and circumstances with our telephone system here recently, we decided that we would be better off trying to pull some portion of that capital project from the 07 capital budget into this supplemental. And I have Stan Herrera here who can talk about the current situation with our phone system, which led us to that decision, if you like.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. Stan, good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Stan Herrera. I'm with the Enterprise Technology Services Division, Department of Administration. Come to you today to talk a little bit about the current phone system that is in use by state agencies in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. This would include the 465, 269, and 451 exchanges on the phone system. Nortel Systems, which is the company responsible for that, those phone switches gave notification to the state of Alaska in November of last year that effective April 1st of 2006, the state of Alaska would no longer be supported in its current configuration on those switches. The proposal was made by Nortel to upgrade those switches, which ran the gamut from from about $2 million to $8 million. We've also got a proposal from our consortium, which is Northrop Grumman, Cisco Systems, and GCI, to assist the state in moving towards a converged technology, which was the result of our capital project for approximately $15 million this year. The $1 million that we're asking for is significant to us in that of recent, the PBX phone systems have suffered outages. I'm very concerned we're going to suffer a catastrophic outage, which will result in no phone service for either Juneau, Anchorage, or Fairbanks, which would mean a disruption of service as well as a potential safety of life issue.
Okay. Thanks, Stan. A couple things before we go to the table. So, item line number two, item section one, corresponds with 4B down at line nine. In that, in 4B, we take general fund and put it into the info services fund, and then on line two, we take it out. So when we see info services fund, we can just as easily be looking at GF.
Right? That's exactly right, Mr. Chairman. It is general fund.
Just to clarify that. And could I ask, let's go to the table then. Senator Bundy.
A couple of questions. Being you're aware of this last November, I'm wondering why it's in the supplemental rather than in the regular budget. And do I understand we're going to spend $1 million as a temporary fix and then be replaced by a $15 million fix?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy. That's not the case here. What the case is here is that I want to get very proactive with resolving the issues of a phone system. I want to begin the process of stabilizing the PVX phone environment as we move towards a converged technology. So that's the direction that we want to head.
Senator Bundy?
Well, I'd go back.
Senator Bundy, if you would call
on that. Yeah, I'd go back to then. Appears like this should have been in the regular budget rather than the supplemental, because this is an event that we knew was going to happen, or somebody knew was going to happen.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just on that point, we did originally have this in our 07 budget, but because of the recent instability that we've experienced with the phone system, we felt that there was need to try to move this up and get, as Stan said, a little more proactive with it. And so we're actually just taking a small portion of what was originally in that capital budget and trying to get started earlier than we would otherwise be able to do if we left it in the capital budget.
Okay. Senator Dyson and then Senator Hoffman.
Yeah. Eric, are you irrevocably committed to the technical solution that you... Yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I'm going to defer to my friend Stan on that question.
And through the chair, Senator Dyson, your question is, are we irrevocably committed to voice over IP or to the legacy phone environment?
Are you, I think you're going to be replacing all the Nortel switches.
The intent, through the chair, Senator Dyson, the intent is to move to a converged technology. Last year, we came to the legislature and asked for a fast-track supplemental as well as a budget for a security, if you remember the network security initiative that we put into place that basically bolstered our infrastructure, our network infrastructure. The intent is to collapse the separate phone systems or voice systems and video systems into one converged network to ultimately achieve some savings by moving those into one environment.
I understood that. What my question is, have you already issued contracts or are you already started down that road?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, we have begun the process of trying to take an assessment of the environment, the PVX environment. When we were given notification by Nortel Systems, the intent was to determine where we were as far as our software configurations and hardware. If you remember also last year or year before, the state of Alaska, the state office building in Juneau was hit by lightning, as well as we had suffered a lightning strike in Anchorage. Both of those lightning strikes resulted in damage to the PBX phone systems in those facilities. So we've been playing this catch-up game of trying to continue to keep those systems alive. They're approximately 13 years old at this time.
I think you just said no, that you're still in the analysis. You have not issued contracts that irrevocably commit you to this new collapsing.
That's correct. I'm sorry. I apologize for the long-winded answer there.
Thank you.
You bet, sir.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This request is for $1 million in GF that's going to be transferred, but the total projected cost at this point is $21 million, and is that all general fund, or what's the composition of the total projected $21 million?
To the chair, Senator Hoffman, the capital project as submitted was for $15 million and not $21 million. I'm not sure where $21 came from.
Well, I'm looking at your backup here that says $15 million for $1 million for 06, $14 million for 07, and 08 and 09, you still have $3 million, and you have, this is a new phase program totaling $21 million.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, what you're looking at there is the projected amount. This initial amount is to take care of the core of Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks represents about 14,000 phones of the 20,000 phones used by state agencies across the state. The FY08 and FY09 projections are to take care of rural Alaska and to bring those communities such as Nome, Kotzebue, Bethel into this technology.
And the second part of my question, funding sources, is this assume that all of these would be general fund dollars?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the $1 million for this year and the $14 million for FY07 are general fund. It's a little early to tell just what the fund source makeup might be for years 08 and 09. I think it's possible that by FY 2008, we will have sufficient reserves in the ISF to begin using some of that fund without having to capitalize it for our capital projects going forward. At this point, I can't tell you exactly how much and the precise timing of that, but I think we're getting closer to that kind of situation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Green?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know if this involves a chargeback increase to among all the agencies. Will this be on a chargeback basis?
Through the chair, Senator Green, once the telephone work is completed and the systems are actually in place, we would then begin depreciating that investment, and that would, in time, result in higher chargeback rates to agencies. That's correct.
So we can not only pay for it up front, we can also pay for the higher rates charged to the agencies.
Well, through the chair, Senator Green, the higher rates charged to the agencies would be for depreciation, and the theory would be that we would be building up the money that we're collecting for that depreciation and enabling us to spend it on projects going forward.
Thank you.
Does it go into a sinking fund?
Mr. Chairman, it's set aside in the Information Services Fund to be held for future appropriation.
So it is
sinking fund.
Is it put into a special fund that is what amounts to a depreciation fund?
Mr. Chairman, it's not put into a different fund from the Information Services Fund, but it is, as I understand it, somewhat segregated. And I'm not the chargeback expert in my office, but we can certainly explore that and get some more detailed information back to you on that.
That would be interesting to see that. Let's see. Other questions? How does this stand? Somewhere in one of the other budgets, there's a $15 million voice-over internet protocol request. How does this fit with that?
And to the chair, this is the beginning portion of that that we're trying to do the initial assessment and also to be prepared in the event of any type of additional failures that we have. If we lose one of our phone switches in Juneau, Anchorage, or Fairbanks, you can anticipate either a disruption of service or total loss of service to anywhere from 4,000 to 6,000 phones, depending on where that failure occurs. And so what we're trying to do is to stay on the leading edge of that and hopefully not go through that.
I understand that. I guess my question is the $15 million embodied in the $21 million, or are we starting down at $26 million?
And to the chair, we're, this is all part of that $15 million. This is a portion of that. This would make that reduce that to $15 million by $1 million.
So the FY07 $14 million that's shown here sits in one of these budgets as a $15 million request for voice over internet.
That's correct.
So this whole project is not a 21 and 15. Oh, I can't add. It's 36. This isn't a $36 million project. This is a $21 million project, of which $14 million is voice over internet.
That's $14 million is in the 07 for voice over IP. The million dollars, which is for we're currently asking for the telephone system replacement, which is also related to the voice over IP, is all part and parcel of the same thing. So you're correct. It's not a $36 million. Happily, it's only estimated at this point at $21 million.
Okay. And did Nortel, they just called us up one day on October 14th and said, take a hike? What does that mean, facing serious support issues?
To the chair, what it means is that effective April 1st, the state of Alaska will have to post a $10,000 bond for every call we make for a request for service to Nortel. And that request would go on a best effort queue, meaning they will try to be responsive to our needs, but not sure. Of recent, I think a few weeks ago in Anchorage, we suffered a problem with our PBX in Anchorage, and again, we were put on a best effort of trying to get help to resolve it because we have not come up to their, if you will, standards for response to our technical needs.
Is this the first time they've told us we are going to have support issues?
This is the first time that it has ever been formally put in writing from Nortel Systems that they would not support the state of Alaska in its current configuration, yes.
Are they a monopoly?
Pardon me, sir?
Are they a monopoly? But they don't sound like they're being very good partners, but that's probably for you to decide. I would think if the state of Alaska, you're one of their major customers, or certainly good customers, you'd probably give more than six months' notice that you were pulling the pin. But be that as it may, Senator Bundy and then Senator Dyson.
Thank you. Apparently this system, current system, has lasted 13 years.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that is correct.
Yeah. And do we have a projection on, and I've gone a little far afield here, Mr. Chairman, but projection on how long the new system will last, being, you know, technology every 15 minutes, we got a new cell phone out.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I feel very confident in that if the state moves in towards a converged technology, that will last for quite a while. This is the way that the rest of the nation and the world is headed towards IP technology.
But what's quite a while?
I would say, through the chair, Senator Bundy, I would say at least that same amount of time.
In other words, $1 million a year plus to make this change, and then we can look at it doing it again. Well, understand technology changes. You're going to put out RFPs, obviously. Would you plan to do business with the same company that gave us their 6 months' notice?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I, at this point, would probably not do business with a company that does not take the interest of the state of Alaska at heart. But, I mean, they have every right to submit a proposal, as does any other vendor.
Senator Dyson and then Senator Stedman.
Yeah. Did not Nortel, have they not been encouraging us to upgrade their switches for some period of time?
And through the chair, Senator Dyson, that is correct. And if we go back in history a little bit here to the contract that the state of Alaska had for telecommunications partnering agreement with ACS, the state of Alaska paid with an assumption that those upgrades and everything was occurring, and it was not. So we're basically behind the curve on that of the support that we had assumed was all part of that. And also, in some defense of that contract, it was that we were moving to a totally new network, and so we were going to migrate off of this anyway. So there has been that frame of mind that we have a system that we were going to get off of anyway. So for the last, 4 to 6 years, we've kind of made that kind of decision to migrate off, and now we're suffering the consequences of not supporting that.
Senator Dyson?
Well, to continue, my understanding is that Nortel had long anticipated we would be in this situation and was encouraging the upgrades that were necessary and on a proprietary equipment. Not just anybody else can come along and add on to that switch. So it is a monopoly in a sense that they make the switch and so on. And I had not known of this controversy that we expected the upgrades for nothing and so on. But I think it's an unfair characterization to think that Nortel did not alert us to this impending situation and all of a sudden dropped a bomb on us last fall. One other question, if I may. Did we not try as voice over IP a few years ago and have an unsuccessful experience with that?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, that is absolutely correct. But the analysis of that failure was not due to the technology. The analysis of that failure was due to the fact that that company failed to use Cisco's best practices as they deployed voice over IP. Voice over IP currently runs successfully all over the world today. There are major companies, banks, and what have you that currently use that technology every day right now for their businesses.
Thank you. Senator Stedman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as we go through and we get into this obsolescence cycle that Senator Bundy has pointed out, and we have our depreciation in our little sinking funds, why don't we have some funds in place to automatically upgrade this and other items within the system, or do we? Or do they take the depreciation with, you know, chargebacks from other agencies and then absorb it into other areas within the budget? I'm just curious on how this system works.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, as I indicated earlier, I think going forward, as we charge depreciation against these assets as they become deployed, we will begin building reserves that we will have available to us down the road for the next time that we have to upgrade or significantly change the system. So I would expect that we will have chargeback funding that will be available for that going forward.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you don't get the $1 million in supplemental, or if there's some lesser amount that you're given, does that affect your next year's request to your budget?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, our original capital budget request for this item was $15 million. We requested to have $1 million of that placed into the supplemental environment, so reducing the capital budget to $14 million. If we ended up getting less than the $1 million this year, I guess I would say it would be my hope that we would get the balance of it in the 07 budget as it had originally been requested, although I would also assert that we believe we badly need the $1 million in the current year in the supplemental.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? All right, does admin have any other items in this budget?
That's it for us on this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Eric, Sam, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's go to Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development. Sam? This is line 3, section 2A. Morning, Sam. Morning.
For the record, good morning, Chair. Thank you for giving me the opportunity one more time to testify for Commerce. In the supplemental, we are asking a $75,000 statutory program for fit for the Boston Salmon Show. And last year, we had an attendance of approximately 800 people, and this year we are expecting more people to come to the show. And this is the one of the biggest salmon show in the U.S. And there are some other shows also, just like Salmon of America. But what they do the show just for farmed salmon. And this is where all these salmon buyers and sellers meet in this show. And they make a lot of deals, just like they extended the contract and they go for multiple shipments. And that really helps the state of Alaska to bring more revenues and also create jobs in the state of Alaska.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Sam, would you identify yourself and your position for the record, please?
Oh, yep. I'm Samuel Thomas, Administrative Director, Department of Commerce.
Okay. Questions of the Department of Commerce on item 2A. Senator Stedman?
I'm just curious, Mr. Chairman, why this wasn't put into the budget earlier. It's just a normal budgetary process.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yesterday the same question, you know, came from the Legislative Finance. I recommended that it should be actually an increment in the regular budget. But it didn't. I was also new. I was also learning all these things in the budget over here about the Boston Salmon Show. So therefore, I recommended that next year on, because this is going to be an annual event every year. Therefore, it's recommended to be in the budget.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Pardon me. Senator Olson.
Was there a contingency that, or was there a group of people that went to the last year's?
Yes, there were.
What did that cost?
The total cost was $140,000 approximately.
Last year?
Yeah, last year. And this year, we are not expecting the cost is going to be that high, because the fishing industries are willing to give us more money. You know, we have already promised $40,000 out of that $75,000 request. Therefore, another one more month to go. Therefore, we are expecting we will get that $75,000 from the fishing industry.
One follow-up. Chairman, on your backup, you've got the anticipated $75,000 will be funded with the sponsorships received from Alaska seafood processors and producers and other Alaska businesses. Is that also included in the equation? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Okay, thanks, Sam. Let's go to item 2B.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item is the AFSCME. They are asking a $395,000 the funding is not I'm going to request Ms. Ray Rira to explain more about the AFSCME.
Morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ray Ryuta. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what AFSCME is requesting is authorization to expend matching funds to match federal market access monies which have been provided to us. We anticipate collecting these funds from the processor's assessments that we have as part of our funding sources. The feds have provided us an additional sum of money this year, which we need authorization to expend this $395,000 in order to match and obtain those funds from the feds for market access program. Market access program funds our overseas marketing activities.
Okay. Questions? And this matches $1.2 million in federal money. Is that a mandatory match?
It is, sir.
Okay. Questions on item 2B? Senator Green?
Yeah, I just want to be sure I understood what additional services will be offered or what this will mean.
This will be additional marketing activities in Europe and Asia that we've already agreed to with the Foreign Agriculture Service, who funds the market access program.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. If none, thank you for joining us this morning, Matt. Let's go to line number 5, section 3A. That's corrections. Morning.
For the record, my name is Charlene Griffin. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Corrections.
The supplementals we have before you today in the Fast Track Supplemental are $1,168,700 for our out-of-state contractual component. The department has experienced an increase in inmate population that has been continual this fiscal year. For the most part, our populations over the last couple of months have ran between 108 and 110% of emergency capacity. Our emergency capacity in our system is 3,206 beds statewide. And that puts us anywhere from 270 to 300 inmates over that emergency capacity. That creates problems in our institutions. We're working on several projects to increase our beds in state. We're trying to develop some crisis overflow beds in state. In addition to that, for population management, we have found that we need to send more offenders to Arizona in order to manage the population. This $1,168.7 is a phased-in approach to that. It would send 85 to 90 offenders around the first part of March, 50 more each in the beginning of April, May, and June. Even with these beds, it's projected that we will exceed our emergency capacity by approximately 64,000 man days this fiscal year.
All right, questions of Charlene? Item 3A. All right, thank you. Let's go to 3B, inmate health care.
B, we're requesting $2.6 million in our inmate health care component. With the overcrowding that's occurring, we are seeing more health care problems and more health emergencies occur in our facilities. Through the month of about midway through January, we have experienced approximately $1.9 million in catastrophic type cases. These include dialysis cases, lung cancer, breast cancer, renal failure, septic shock, sepsis, bone marrow failure, strokes, one person with an infection in the bone and the spine. We don't anticipate our health care costs going down, and the $2.6 million should cover these costs through mid-January in addition to more cases throughout the year.
Okay. Questions? Inmate health care? All right, Charlene, let's go to item 3C.
Item 3C is a supplemental to cover FY05 costs in inmate health care for $755,000. During the prior fiscal year, we had some catastrophic cases. We came to this body for a supplemental. The cases increased and the cost of some of those cases increased. We were left with vendors that we could not pay in FY05. We owe Alaska Regional Hospital approximately $255,000 with projected interest charges. Grand Delay, our contractor in Arizona, we owe another $300,000. CCA, the prison where we contract with in Arizona, we owe them $120,000, and we have an additional $80,000 in fee-for-service vendors that have not been paid.
Questions on inmate health care? All right, seeing none, thank you, Charlene, for joining us this morning. Disaster Relief Fund, who's going to help us? John, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green.
Were we not going to do law?
I've got 4B next. Fund transfer.
Sorry.
Right, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Kramer. I'm the Admin Service Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Line number, I believe, 8, Section 4A. It's for the Disaster Relief Fund. General funds in the total of $4,143,800. There's a description on what we're requesting the funding for in the narrative that you can read. Primarily, we've just had a number of disasters that we have ongoing, and then some of the older ones are federal disasters that The federal government has allowed some additional claims to be paid, and we're asking for that percentage to support those. We have about approximately $93,900 in an unobligated balance in the fund right now.
Okay. John, the 93.9 and the 4.1438, that will bring the fund to zero, right?
It'll meet the obligations that we have.
And so the fund will be at zero.
Correct.
And isn't there somewhere in the, is it next year's budget, or where else is there a request for?
Yes, we're asking for capitalization funds of an additional $3 million to capitalize the fund for anticipated disasters.
Okay. Questions on disaster relief? Senator Stedman?
A couple of one of them is on the, Mr. Chairman, the capitalization question as far as the viability in this particular bill. But the other one is looking at some of these disasters, some of which are more familiar with others. But I assume that these disasters are over and we're just doing some finished cleanup work. And I'm just kind of curious on why it's here, not versus the regular operating and or capital budget.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Stedman, because of the fund balance, as you see that it's down to $93,000, disasters happen. We respond to disasters. We identify needs. Citizens make claims. That process takes time. The ones that you're seeing that I think that you're talking about are the two oldest ones. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about. We have been trying for 2 to 3 years to get the federal government to allow some claims that were in those areas, and we were just successfully getting that accomplished this year. So in order to fully expand and to execute on the claims that we have for those areas, we need to do our share. It's a 75-25 split, and so we're asking in those particular cases for the 25%.
Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, maybe we could get some additional information on some of these disasters. I assume the southeast storm was the fall storm around Thanksgiving where we had mudslides in Haines and all the way down through southeast.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, that is correct.
The ones I'm familiar with, Mr. Chairman, the mud's not going anywhere. And I think, you know, we've got an obligation to try to help clean some of these things up and respond, but I guess I still question the timing of them, and maybe we could get some additional information.
And Senator Stedman, again, what information would you like?
Well, I'd like a further breakdown of these particular items and the urgency for the expenditures outside of the normal budgetary process. I know that the emergencies I'm more familiar with, or these disasters I'm more familiar with, if this is cleanup money versus money that's already been expended, which I think this is coming cleanup money, it appears, I would question the timing of the allocation today versus in 2 months. Again, trying to, I guess, with the overall intent as we go through these four supplemental budgets of varying degrees, that we try to have as much in the regular operating budget and capital budget and away from large supplemental budgets, unless it's absolutely necessary.
John, I think the question is of the approximately $4.2 million, what has not been spent? Is that your question, Senator Stedman?
Correct. Part of the question.
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Stedman. Maybe it's not, and we can provide you as much information as you like. Much of the money that you're seeing for the 05 disasters, those are a significant portion of it is going to communities. For instance, here in Juneau, a number of roads were washed out, a number of their facilities were damaged,
They have had to expand funds to make those emergency repairs and get those into a workable condition. They make application to us, and we then fund those things that are allowed. So what we're doing on some of these is reimbursing people for funds that they've already expended. Our fund balance is such that we can't do that any longer. We can't make those obligations. And so that's why you're seeing this in the fast track, and then you're going to see an additional request for $3 million to capitalize the fund for future disasters. And we know we're going to have them. But we can provide you as much detail as you'd like to see.
If I could, Mr. Commissioner, I recognize that there's, you know, when there's a natural disaster, there's unforeseen expenditures, and you got to do what you got to do to keep the roads and so on and so forth open. But then there's also cleanup after the fact, and some of these issues that I'm more familiar with than others, but some of them still have to be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of work to do mm-hmm. through capital projects or just general mucking them out. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a difference between capital that's been expended where you're running short to keep the roads open and cleanup activity. And maybe it'll help to go through and they can just get us a little bit more information. And
is your purpose to identify it as 06 or 07 spending?
Correct. That's most of it.
So the question of Mr. Kramer is there money's not yet expended that could be moved to the 07 capital budget? Is that right, Senator Stedman?
Partially, correct.
Mr. Chairman, another piece of information maybe that I can offer Senator Stedman. Disasters, when we have a disaster, we start getting claims or we have needs from the moment the disaster happens, sometimes up to 5 years after the disaster. The initial assessments and the initial work that comes in, you're exactly right. We have costs that happen, road cleanup, mucking things out like you talked about. These disasters you won't see closed out for a couple of years at least, and maybe up to 4 or 5 years. And so as those costs come in and as those claims are eligible, we pay them out of the disaster relief fund. And so I don't know if that helps any or not, but you have immediate needs, and then you have some needs that come in ongoing as the disaster is winding down. And that's what you're seeing here on those 02, the 04 type disasters, is we're getting some of that wound down. The 05 type activity is just really starting up.
Let's do this. Senator Stedman, if you would just get with Mr. Kramer and just work through the questions.
Sure.
And maybe use examples, and I think then we'll get to where you want to go. Is that okay?
Yep.
Is that all right with you, Senator Stedman?
Yep.
Okay. All right. I think that's it for you, is it not?
Yep.
Other questions on disaster relief? Senator Hoffman and Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But for the most part, the expenditures that you are requesting here have been all approved by the federal government, and this is our 25% match to assist these communities in reimbursing them for unanticipated expenses, and that is one of the reasons that we're trying to go through the fast track so it does not put an undue burden financially on these small communities.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hoffman, primarily you are correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Olson.
My question was along the same line, Mr. Chairman. Is the $4.1 million, the 25%, so the rough total is another $12 million coming from the federal government?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, primarily that is accurate. It takes certain criteria in order for disasters to meet federal declaration, and that's a process that takes time. It doesn't just happen overnight unless it's a very, very significant event.
In order to get to $13 million, we need to put this in to realize that from the federal government.
We've applied, through the chair, we've applied for the ones that we know that make federal disaster declarations. We've applied for those. All of these disasters that you see on here have gone before the Disaster Policy Cabinet here at the state of Alaska, and the Disaster Policy Cabinet has approved these as disasters, state or federal disasters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Other questions on disaster relief? Seeing none, thank you, John, for joining us this morning.
Mr. Chairman.
Ask Department of Law to come forward. Line number 10, section number 5. Morning, ladies.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Catherine Doughty, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Law, and with me today on the line is Craig Tillery, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division, and Susan Parks, Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. We're in the Fast Track Supplemental. That's kind of unusual for us, but it, as Sheriff Raska explained, it does save the state interest if we can write these checks a little bit sooner than we normally would. As usual, the judgments and claims section of the supplemental appropriation is a mixed bag of different court awards for attorney's fees and costs and settlements the state has entered into as a result of litigation. And we can proceed however the committee wishes. We can go through these in detail, or if you have questions about specific ones that you'd like us to answer.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Tillery, you're with us this morning. Any testimony or just for questions?
Mr. Chairman, I am available for questions that you have about any of the specific cases.
Okay, thank you, Craig. I would suggest to the committee that you have two pages of a listing of what adds up to the $2.6 million. Is there anything on there that pops out at you if you would like to ask particular questions about? And if not at this moment, if you would take a look at that and see if there are things that you may want to speak with them about. We obviously aren't going to pass this out today, and they can come back if there's something that prompts your interest after the meeting. So first question, anything on the two pages that you might want to talk about? Senator Stedman.
Well, just an overall question, Mr. Chairman, if I could, rather than dive into the individual ones. I assume that the $2.6 million, there's an increased cost to, as referenced earlier, by not paying it. There may be some interest gained by not paying it. I'm just wondering what the spread is, because that's what we're really looking at, what it's going to cost us compared to what we're going to earn on it. There must be a fairly wide spread.
I'm sorry, Senator Stedman, I didn't understand you. I didn't quite hear your question.
Well, the way I interpreted the response, if I could, Mr. Chairman, the $2.6 million, by paying it early, it's going to save us some interest costs. We've got some interest that's going to accumulate over the next several months while we work through the regular operating budget. Well, I assume this $2.6 million is sitting in some earning account somewhere, and it should earn money. So I get more on point for marginal difference between what it's going to cost us and what we're going to gain them.
Well, Senator,
and again, coming back to the same issue, kind of like beating a wore-out drum, coming out to the same overall issue of moving things into these budgets versus out of the normal system, normal flow of things for clarity.
The state general fund does earn interest. I'm not privy to what the present rate of return on that fund is. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to succinctly answer your question, but typically I calculate interest rate through June 30th, and in this case I've calculated it through April 15th to give me time to record the appropriation, and that's what's in here. There are various rates of interest associated with each of these items depending on the year in which the court awarded the fees or the settlement was entered into. The interest rate is established according to the statute, and it is 3 points above the Federal Reserve rate, and it changes every year. So all I can speak to is the amount of money that the state saves by appropriating the funds sooner so that I don't have to wait so long and the interest doesn't continue to accrue over those several months.
And following up on that, so if by chance this bill was passed in 1st of March, we'd say March, April, May, June, we'd save 4 months of interest, so a third of a year.
Senator Wilken, not quite, but you're on the right track. It takes a little time just to the process of recording the appropriation and so forth. It will probably be March 31st or so.
Okay. Senator Dyson?
Thank you. How much do you generally budget for lawsuit settlements in the regular operating budget?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, nothing.
And so how does this amount compare with past years that have showed up in a supplemental budget?
This amount, Senator Dyson, is it's usually between $1 million and $3 to $4 million every year, and it varies every year depending on the kinds of cases the state's involved in. There's been some big ones that were $6-7 million. This is higher than last year, but it's just circumstantial.
Kind of hard to predict. That's why you do it in the supplemental on actuals rather than predicting averages.
That's correct, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. This is very difficult for me, but there's one here that's really a bother to me, and that's the line 19. So 3 years ago, a whistleblower came to me with information, and I promised to protect that whistleblower and both identity and from retribution. And, you know, I've been a great fan of this administration, but I begged the administration and their respective commissioners to protect this person. And the information that came from that whistleblower was what precipitated my asking for the audit of Health and Human Services, Child Protective Services, and Juvenile Justice, which we finally saw this last year, and validated virtually everything that the whistleblower reported to our audit. And the department, over my strong objections, fired the guy. He sued and got a judgment, I think was over $1 million or something like that, and has now been reduced by the court to the $400,000 and change. And so this has sent a very chilling message to would-be whistleblowers in the state, and I'm quite concerned about it. And I guess that I would prefer that this amount be deducted from the budget of either the governor's office or the department, but this is a great concern to me, and I will ask offline about the other ones here that were settlements to whistleblowers. I see at least one, and I can do that offline, but I got to tell you that there's almost nothing that this administration has done that has offended me or has been as unprofessional as this particular punishment of this whistleblower. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Stedman, I just did a rough number. There's about $104,000 in interest that's part of this appropriation. So just if you would like some additional information in regard to the spread, just let me know or let Catherine know, and we can find that out. Obviously, this isn't leaving today.
Right, I was just curious, because I think that's there's the issue of timely payout, and then the issue of state is of the spread. It just I think it's more accurate to talk about the spread than the total interest.
Yeah, but that's what's at.
Okay.
It would be the number that we would be considering. If we waited longer, it would move to a higher number, obviously. So, okay. Other questions? Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is in regards to 11 and 15. This case involves Trooper Dan Scott I think we, is this the individual in Antioch? And why do we have two different, there are two different incidences here in excess of $800,000?
Senator Hoffman, they involve different plaintiffs, different women who were kidnapped and sexually assaulted by Trooper Scott.
And I guess it probably is not to you, but what has the department learned from this incident, and what, if anything, are they doing differently in recruiting so that individuals like this could potentially be weeded out?
Senator Hoffman, let me just see if there's something in the detail about that. It says that, as far as we know, there's no corrective action that's been taken, but Deputy Attorney General Tillery might have some additional information about that.
Senator Hoffman and Mr. Chairman, this is a crime. It is not something that you can change a procedure or something like that to deal with. The department is on the alert for this, is my understanding, but there was viewed to be no structural change that could be taken that would prevent this in the future, other than, again, dealing with hiring practices and being careful in these kinds of situations. But this was not an accident or something that fell through the cracks. This was a crime committed by an individual.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions of the Department of Law? Again, you've been supplied with detail on each one of these with the standard questionnaire. So if you have the time and interest, if you want to read through those, and if there's any that pique your interest, please let me know, and we'll have these ladies get additional detail. Anything else? Okay. Thanks, ladies, for joining us this morning. Let's go to revenue. Let's go to natural resources. Line 11, section 6A through C. Morning, Nico.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nico Buss. I'm the Administrative Service Manager for the Department of Natural Resources. We are respectfully requesting a fund source change for $350,000 in our parks management appropriation. The reason for this is that between fiscal year 05 and fiscal year 06, the total requirement for this budget to increase their receipts was $470,000. Based on the initial revenue collection for the first 6 months, we're going to be falling short of that significantly. We realized that in the fall, and the Division of Parks took immediate action to kind of live within the budget. If they would have to make all this up within their operations, that would require them to reduce their park service significantly. We have gone through this once before in fiscal year 03, if you remember, and so we talked to them and we talked with the administration, and we would like to keep all the park units open. That's one of the legislative requirements, that we keep the park units open to the extent that we can. This funding source switch from receipt support service to general fund will allow all the park units to be open. The total shortfall for this fiscal year in the Division of Parks is $750,000. Some of that is caused by the higher cost of energy, and we came to you in the energy supplemental for $92,000. So that leaves about $650,000 shortfall. $350,000 of that we'd like to switch through this supplemental request to general funds. Then the other $300,000, they have taken austerity measures, and we are trying to collect more revenue and through new programs. There's a lot of things at stake in this request. The other thing that is really difficult for us in terms of managing this program is that we really do not know what the actual receipts and the revenues are going to be till the last day of June. At that time, if we were to be short, then it's hard to reverse. And so One of the requests that we have in front of you here is to roll this appropriation into the rest of the Department of Natural Resources resource appropriation. If they were to be short at that time, and the legislature would have already recessed, then we could use some of the rest of the department's appropriations or lapse to assure that they can finish the fiscal year rather than have them take emergency actions in the middle of the tour season. And so the lines that are reflected here in terms of the reappropriations on 11, 12, 13, and 14, they will allow us to roll this appropriation into the rest of the department, and then any projected year-end lapse could be used in case the department Division of Parks revenue collection is not up to the projection. So we feel with this $350,000 switch, we're getting a long way. We are charging more revenues where we can. There's been austerity measures to live within the budget to the extent they can. And so with that, I'll turn it over to questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions of DNR? Senator Bundy, and Senator Bundy, before you do that, we'll come to Margaret Brody and Jerry Lewinsky here in just a moment for testimony, if any. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm pleased we're collecting more user fees. I'm just wondering about the need for the supplemental at this time. There's not a lot of activity going on in the parks right now, and what would be the impact of delaying this money until a regular budget?
Through Chair, Senator Bundy, the urgency in terms of timing is that right now a lot of our park seasonal staff is on seasonal layoff, and we normally call them back in March. If for some reason this fast-track supplemental would not be appropriated, given that the organization is in its own appropriation, they would have to take measures to stay within this budget. And so if there would be an assurance that they would be meeting this requirement some other way, then, you know, we could move it to a regular supplemental. But our timing and the urgency is in the fact that we are right now on the verge of calling back our seasonals, and if we don't have assurances that we can get some more money, it takes a lot of seasonals to make up the $350,000, because they don't make a lot of money and they only come for a couple months.
Other questions on parks management? Thank you. Then the next three, Nico, are
they're basically the technicality to remove these appropriations into the rest of the DNR resource appropriation, which will allow any other organization that has some lapse money to help, because we are still $300,000 that we are trying to assist them with.
Okay. Other questions? Ms. Brody or Mr. Lewinsky, any testimony from Anchorage?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to maybe emphasize some of the points that Nico made that, you know, we are...
Jerry, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Jerry Lewinsky. I'm the Director of State Parks for Alaska. What I would like to testify is that, in fact, we have put into place a number of austerity measures. I've demanded that my staff stop all but the most essential and emergency spendings throughout the state. And so we're really trying to stay within our budget. Again, the reason why we are requesting this fast-track supplemental is, again, I have to bring back my seasonal people in here shortly to get the parks ready for the visitor season and to get everything ready to be collecting these fees. And the longer we delay and the more delay of that process, then the less fees that we can collect to put into our budget. So it's a matter of getting those folks in place, ready, trained, and ready to roll for the visitor season. Also, you know, we've discovered that this winter our receipts are down mainly because of snow and some other factors. So it's really crucial for us that we're ready for a spring startup and we're able to collect the fees and get them in our budget.
All right, thank you, Jerry. Okay, other questions, comments? Thank you, Nico, for joining us this morning. Let's see, we did public safety, revenue, item line 16, section number 8. Morning, sir.
Chairman, my name is Bob Bartholomew. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The request for the supplemental of $550,000 is basically to allow the staff to move forward with what we call a pre-investment due diligence process, which means before a decision is made to make an investment in certain large investments, we'll do due diligence to do an analysis and to understand the return and the risks of certain investments. And our existing operating budget over the years has contained money for doing this type of analysis. And the current FY06 budget has approximately $300,000 in there for doing pre-investment due diligence. And we currently are doing due diligence on an investment project that would, if we actually make an investment, no cost going to the operating budget. It's just capitalized as a cost of the investment. If a decision is made not to make an investment after you do the due diligence, those are called dead deal costs, and those are charged to our operating budget. So right now we're currently evaluating a real estate investment, and there hasn't been a final decision of whether we'll actually purchase it. And we've incurred in excess of our $300,000 that we have in our budget. If that project, if we actually make that investment, that would free up those funds. So our decision to come forward with a fast-track supplemental was based on two things. One, we may have already used our due diligence funds for this fiscal year, and we won't know the ultimate outcome of this particular real estate investment before we would like to have started on an analysis of a potential Alaska gas line investment. So our decision was, in discussion with OMB, that we should try to quantify what potentially could be spent in a gas line due diligence project in this fiscal year and put that into the fast track supplemental. The executive director has written a letter to our board and copied the legislature that we would like to start this project as soon as practical. So we're out, we're working on a request to hire an advisor to assist us in this analysis. If we would be hesitant to enter into that contract, not knowing that we have the potential authorization to expend. I think that's an overview of the process and why we would expend money in looking at an investment.
And how long will it take, Bob, to perform the analysis, roughly?
Right now, what's being contemplated is a two-step project. Step one would be could take place before there's an actual agreement between the producers and the state. So phase one would be this type of investment is called a capital infrastructure investment. And overall, the permanent fund has not had much experience in capital infrastructure investments. Around the country and around the world, over the last 3 to 5 years, investment in capital infrastructure, be it pipelines, toll roads, airports, has been a pretty growing investment asset class. So our first phase would be, part of the contract would be, we would like an expert in capital infrastructure investments to do education for the board and the staff on, you know, a gas line investment, what are the risk and return characteristics and profile of this type of investment, exactly how does it fit in to our existing asset allocation. So that's the step that we would proceed with as soon as we have an advisor hired. The second step, which is to actually do an analysis of a specific gas line investment, we could do some work ahead of an actual agreement between the state and producers to get prepared, but the bulk of that work really couldn't take place until we knew exactly what was being proposed as a potential investment. So the timing on that one, we would start a little bit of work probably this fiscal year, but a lot of it would take place once there's an agreement. And the total cost, if there was to go forward and do a complete analysis of a potential investment in the gas line, would exceed $550,000. There would be costs incurred in FY07 in addition to this supplemental.
Thank you, Bob. Questions of Bob? Senator Stebbin?
Yeah, I just keep coming back to the same thing. Last year, I think the general fund is about $2.5 billion, and all these supplements are right under $300 million. It's about 11% change, which to me is alarmingly large. But with that, and I think it's unprecedented. My good senator there is ready to fall out of his chair with just a mere mention of those numbers. But
actually, he just woke up.
But on a serious note, Mr. Chairman, I think all of Alaskans pretty much all hope that we get a gas line sooner than later and we go forward with that project. But it is years away at best, and we don't have a contract, we don't have an agreement. And to me, it seems awful early in the timing to start an allocation of $550,000 to head down this road when within 3 months we're going to have an operating budget out of here, off this table, and a capital budget off this table. And when we get a contract, and hopefully we will, it's not a contract to build a line. It's just a contract to proceed down the road to build a gas line. And it'll be several more years of work just to get to that point of constructed or not constructed. So I would question the timing of the venture. And I'm not so sure there shouldn't be some public debate concerning this issue before we even go down some of these roads. Although I certainly, as a personal viewpoint, would welcome the permanent fund reviewing that ownership interest. But I think it's premature at this time for these funds to be in a fast-track supplemental, unless it can be convinced otherwise. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Bob, does the capital infrastructure piece, can it travel on its own? Can it be finished and then the investment piece or the part two be picked up at a later date?
Mr. Chairman, I think in one perspective, yes, you could say let's proceed, make sure that the Board of Trustees and the staff and in public meetings, so anyone interested in understanding this type of investment, we could proceed with that type of education and analysis of does it fit into the portfolio of the permanent fund. I think the beginning, and to Senator Stedman's question, the timing would be, it really comes down to there is uncertainty about when there's going to be an agreement and what role various state entities will play in any agreement. And so the executive director's approach is to try to be as prepared as possible. We may not expend the entire $550,000 this year. We may wait. But the other side of it is if there's an agreement, even though there may be no anticipation of actual construction or invested money being put out for 2, 3, 4 years, they're going to want to know what is the state agreement, who is going to be able to help invest in whatever percentage ownership is agreed to. And so from our standpoint, it's just really an issue of what getting prepared starting now. There were people asking us a year ago, why haven't you started, looking at this? And at that time, I think the executive director agreed with Senator Stedman. It seems like it's pretty early, undefined what our role is going to be. Over this year, it's matured a little bit, I guess, in the public that the state is very interested, the administration is very interested in having an ownership interest. I'm not familiar if the legislature has officially taken a position, but it's become aware or enough public awareness that state ownership is being considered. We have a statute that the legislature has passed many years ago that basically puts some outlines to what the permanent fund would do on a potential in-state investment. And it says that we would make that investment if the risk and return that's available is comparable to other types of investments to the permanent fund. And so we think the roads have come together that we should start being able to answer some of those questions. And again, to Senator Stedman's question about some public discussion on this issue, I think our hope would be the information that we start gathering, to the extent possible, is all going to be as public as we can make it, unless we're dealing with confidential information, and hopefully can add to that discussion.
Senator Seddon?
If I could just follow up. I think as we go down the road, Mr. Chairman, there'll be a lot of discussion and debate on the table. Assume we fill the gas line and we get those that commodity to market. Should hold that, if there is an equity ownership in that line held by the state, should it be held within the permanent fund or outside the permanent fund? And clearly we have the ability here to appropriate the earnings reserve if we so choose, regardless of what the permanent fund corporation feels fits in or out of their portfolio. So there is several options to dealing with the portfolio of the permanent fund to use for that equity position. And I think we can appropriate fairly quickly the earnings reserve if we so desire. Clearly we're looking at years here in time frame. The other thing that is just a general comment, there's a lot of expenditures going into the analysis of the gas line, and clearly, it's an expensive proposition just to get to the point to see if it's feasible to do it or not. But I would personally be a little cautious on the timing of some of our expenditures so we don't get too euphoric and get ahead of ourselves.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this amount that's here and we look at the reason that you're requesting it, there's already been studies that have been done as to what the investment by the state into the gas line is going to go ahead and produce. What numbers do you see that this due diligence study will do? Will it make a determination whether we're going to invest, not invest, or how much tighter will those numbers get? And will it indeed go on to a no, yes, or no-go situation for investing in the pipeline?
To the Chair, Senator Olson, the state, through the Department of Revenue, has contracted with a team of three advisors to look at the various scenarios for how you would finance or consider financing a state investment in the gas line. And that activity has been ongoing, and costs incurred to receive that information. The permanent fund would take two steps that would hope to try to, leverage or benefit from the work that's already been done. The first step is really more, narrowly focused on the permanent fund, which is, I think, an analysis that we haven't completed yet, and I don't think any other state entity has, which is, how would a capital infrastructure investment, is it appropriate for the permanent fund? And so that is one. We currently have a consultant to the fund, and he's been with the fund for many years. It's Callan & Associates and Michael O'Leary. They have a firm policy where they do not do analysis and recommendations on a specific investment. They're kind of the big picture, what's your strategy, what's your asset allocation. So this first step would be, we want someone to look at this, do an analysis, and make a recommendation to the staff and to the board on whether it's an appropriate investment for the permanent fund, which is a narrower perspective than Senator Steadman saying there's broader state interests, and we would agree, but our interests will look at it from a narrow perspective. So that analysis on, does it fit into an investment portfolio, that one hasn't been done. The second part of where the state has engaged an advisor, part of the provisions we're trying to put into our RFP would be, we expect our advisor to work with the state, and where that information has already been generated, to use it and rely on it if their professional judgment says yes, we can, and only to recreate any type of financial modeling or looking at potential financing scenarios if they think it's necessary. But we want to rely on the state to the extent we can, to the work that's already being paid for.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bob. Other questions? Okay, Bob, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's go to DOT, Nancy. This is line 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. fact, it's the rest of the list. We've got about 13 minutes. So, Nancy, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Nancy Slagle, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The first item that we have requested is $504,200 in general funds to replace one of the jet fans in the Whittier Tunnel. When the Whittier Tunnel was renovated to accommodate vehicle traffic, one of the requirements, the safety requirements, was putting in two jet fans at each end of the tunnel to push the carbon monoxide gases through the tunnel. One of those fans on each side is used on an ongoing basis. The other is a backup when the other fan is down for repair, maintenance, or failure. We did have a catastrophic failure of one of the fans. And we have ordered the replacement of it as we, if anything happens to the other fan or have to do just basic maintenance, we have to close the tunnel down. So this is, we are trying to get this replaced and in place for our upcoming busy season in the spring and summer.
Okay. Questions of Nancy on the tunnel? Senator Bundy?
It may be far-fetched, but you know how much an hour it costs to open the tunnel to vehicles?
To open the tunnel? Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I don't have that information with me, but I know that we have calculated that before. I know that we've got have opened up the tunnels for some special type of commercial enterprises, if there's some need for it. So I can certainly get that for you.
Yeah, well, thank you. If I might, the reason I ask, I know that sometimes cruise ships need it open an hour longer or something, but the people in Whittier have asked that it be open another 2 hours a day, and they were told it would be $400,000 to do that. It seems like a pretty pricey 2 hours, so if you could give me some information on that.
Certainly.
Other questions of DOT in regard to Whittier Tunnel? Okay, thank you. Let's go to line 18, item 9B, Cordova. I'm one ahead of you. Nancy, line 9B.
Correct. 9B is the appropriation level for for C and D. Those two are airport improvement projects. So if I could talk about 9C, the Cordova Runway Safety Area Expansion. This is a discretionary grant provided to us by the Federal Aviation Administration. We had received some authority for this project already, but we had received an additional FAA grant this summer. This is to provide a pilot project or test project for engineered materials arresting system. This is a block system that's going to allow us to avoid having to widen and lengthen the runway safety areas extensively. The FAA is very interested in this project. That's why they provided the additional funds. We're looking at advertising this project sometime this month, and we need to get moving on it fairly quickly. There's a time period there where the runway cannot be worked on because of the fish season, the April-May time frame, or May-June, and so we're wanting to get this completed so that we can get it, the construction actually done in July before it starts getting rainy.
Questions on Cordova? Senator Olson?
Thank you. Ms. Slagle, if you could just tell me, is this the one, this isn't the runway downtown by the lake, this is the main runway out, it's about 5 or 6 miles away from town.
That's, to the chair, that's my understanding, it's the main airport.
Nancy, 9D, Unalakleet.
Unalakleet Airport paving. This is another FAA project. We had originally, I believe, included this in our 07 request. We found that we could make some room in the current year to accommodate this particular project. It's the airport has been paved originally by the military. We've been using a resin-based product to keep down the dust in that area. It's become hazardous. It's become causing problems with the jet airplanes, and Northern Air Cargo has now decided that they can't fly into Unalaq Fleet because of the problems. So we need to go forward with this particular paving project. We're looking at advertising it this month and need to go forward with it so that we can actually complete this project in a two-year time period.
Okay. Question, Senator Wendell?
Yeah, this is runway itself paving, or this is the parking area paving?
It's the runway, taxiway, and apron.
And apron, okay. Thank you.
Other questions on Unalaq Fleet? Okay. Let's see, Nancy. Item 9E is just the line indicating increase in the STIP.
Yes, that's.
And then that flows to 9F. Is that right? Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. 9F is our NHS, non-NHS pavement and bridge refurbishment. We're asking for $15 million in federal receipt authority to go forward with some additional projects identified that can actually be out on the street this spring. We're looking at March and April timeframe for bidding, advertising, and bidding these particular projects. This is basically our preventative maintenance program, which is identifies certain road segments that are cost effective for this particular type of project to extend its useful life. And we're using it for crack sealing, surface treatment, drainage, signage, guardrail illumination, overlays, shoulder repair, bridge work and rehab, and maybe deck drain cleaning or crack sealing, seismic retrofit and scour countermeasures, and some painting. To give you some examples of the types of projects that we're actually using these funds for, they would include some paving in the Homer area, the Skyline Mission and Diamond Ridge, some work on Engstrom Road and Chugach Street and Palmer, working on the Tote Cutoff Highway between milepost 44 and 94, I believe, some work on the Steese Expressway, doing some subgrade reconstruction on the base, and the Richardson Highway, doing some milling and overlay, and then at the Chena Ridge, some chip seal work. So there's a variety of types of projects that this would be used for.
Okay. Questions? Senator Green?
And I assume from this, Mr. Chair, that there's no match for any of these projects.
Through the chair, Senator Green, there is a match requirement for these funds. It's a little less than 10% that is available in the match pot that we have received for this current fiscal year.
Other questions? Thank you, Nancy. The last item is the amendment. They're tied together, if you would, please.
The amendment is for the Kotzebue Sand Building. Again, this is an airport improvement program request. This was we again found some flexibility in our airport improvement program. I believe that there was a known project that we had anticipated was going to be we'd be able to get done this year, and found out that the paving, the repair could be done this year for storm damage, but the actual paving of that wouldn't be done until next year. It gave us a little bit of flexibility in our program to shift that over to this Kotzebue sand building. The building itself is kind of a shed, and the sand has been, by years and years of sand pushing it, as the walls are bulging, and it's quite inadequate to protect the sand and serve our needs. So this is the additional federal funds to go ahead and build that replacement structure. It's a pretty high priority of maintenance and operations people in Kotzebue.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Questions?
Senator Olson. Mr. Chairman, it certainly is needed up there because I haven't heard there was actually a DC-6 that ran off the runway there because of not enough braking action and went down into the portion was frozen, went down off the runway and was certainly got a fair amount of people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, Nancy? Okay. Thank you, Nancy, for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mr.
Did I miss anybody? And that concludes the presentation of Senate. That concludes the presentation of Senate Bill 264. Senator Green, tomorrow.
We'll be having a board meeting tomorrow morning at 9:00 on the 2nd.
Senate Bill 233 tomorrow, Capitol. And is there anything else come before the committee, Senator Dutch?
Not before the committee.
Oh, all right. Anything else? Seeing none, we're adjourned.